listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kolula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is your host of the most, Nikki Kolula. We're going to jump right into this episode. We have an amazing cast of characters, I should say. We have the cast of a very awesome play that I've seen also called Bill W. and Dr. Bob. It's the story of how AA came into form. Miss Janelle Marmo and Steve Gelder, how are you guys?
Doing great. Thanks for having us.
Excellent. Yeah, thanks. Good to see you again, Nikki.
Yes, likewise. And, you know, this play, you know, I don't know if our viewers know this or not. Some do. But I've been sober for 24 years. So when I saw this play, I was like, this is a very good thing. It's a very good message. I want to ask each of you first, how did you get involved with this play and what drew you to it? Janelle, we'll go with you first.
All right, cool. So my husband, Ronnie Marmo, is the director of the show, and he's been very intimately affiliated with the show for the last 20 years. He's produced this show. This is our 9th production of the show. Wow. And he himself has given me liberty to say that he's intimately tied to the content for the last 34 years. He'll be celebrating this year. That's so amazing. He never had a legal drink, and it's really it's something that is very special to him in a number of different ways. It's obviously really special to be able to share the message with a community that he knows and holds so dear. And then I became very close to the show just in the last production about 2 years ago. We were on our honeymoon casting the show, Ronnie and I, and he's like, you have to just see how special this is. And I was like, that's wonderful. As an actor, it's really nice to be able to have a piece of work that you can really sink your teeth into and also make an impact. And so when I saw just how well received this show is amongst the community and just regular theater goers, it made me a believer for sure. I was a frequenter of Al-Anon for quite a long time in my past life. And so being able to be involved in the production now playing Lois Wilson is something that is just such a full circle experience for me personally.
I love that. Steve, what about you? I've seen you in this play. What drew you to this role, and what are you playing the same role as well?
I am. I'm playing Dr. Bob again this time around, and was lucky enough to play it in Chicago last year and also up in Oregon. The show's been going on the road a little bit. Ronnie has the rights to the play now and is trying to put it out nationally as much as possible because the story really is so helpful and so impactful for folks who are involved in the program. I myself am not. I'm not a sober person.
That's all right. We still like you.
Well, I appreciate that. I think one of the best compliments I ever got after the play, someone asked me, they came up and they go, are you in the program? And I said, no. And they go, you should be an alcoholic. I'm like, thanks.
That's awesome.
But I've had people in my life, of course. I've gone to meetings. I've tried to be supportive whenever possible for friends and family, stuff like that. So I actually just found this online. The audition process was up on Actors Access. Wow. And the theater is literally 5 blocks from where I live. So
you're like, I can walk there. This is going to be convenient. Oh, yeah.
It was just like, I'm going to go down and audition. I haven't done anything for a while. It was a couple of years ago. The pandemic was really dying down and people were starting to get back to in-person auditions. I said, I'm going to go down and audition for this thing. Told my wife, I'll be back this afternoon. We'll go out and do something. And throughout the day, I had to keep texting her. She reminds me of this. Like, I have to stay for another hour. They want me to read with someone else. And then a couple hours later, it's like, okay, I have to read again with this other. I don't know what's going on exactly. And the date is stretching out, but
we're going to keep you. We're going to keep you around.
He hasn't been able to shake us since, believe me.
Well, that's cool. You know, and you do a great job in that role. You know, the funny thing is, like, I always wonder if people like watch the play and it resonates just maybe if they are having a problem with this. It's one of those things where alcohol, drugs, whatever it is, it is so prevalent in our society. It's such a commonality, especially with artists, that I wonder if like if people are watching it and kind of like struggling with their own kind of dependencies. Do they talk to you guys afterwards? Have you had that response? I'm sure there are some things where it awakens people. Janelle, we'll go with you first and then Steve. You know, tell me what the response has been just with people that may want to turn a new leaf.
Yeah, you know, I think the interesting thing about this show is it is so relatable. You know, everybody has a vice of some kind. Insert vice here, whatever it might be. And for those of us who may not be actively in a program, there's still things in our lives that we either can resonate with the show directly, or we know somebody who has had this issue, or, you know, maybe they don't know they have that issue. Right. And so there's just a lot.
How about you, Steve?
I'm just like, hey.
And so it really, like there were things in that text that when I read it, the script the first time, that I know I've said verbatim in my life as a non-sober person. And so it's super relatable in that way. Funny story related to that. The gentleman who played Bill W. in our previous production actually shared a story with us after we had cast him in the project about how he came to see our theater to produce a show there. He didn't know what show he was coming to see. He just walked in and sat down and watched a show. And from that moment on, he got in his car and asked for help and realized that this was a story that was kind of divinely inspired to tell to him at that moment in his life. And it's not uncommon for people to catch an ism while watching the show.
My French bulldog's trying to say hello, but it's all right.
Hello. So yes, people come up to us always right after the show. We walk out in our full costume and everything to talk to everybody. And the way people are so giving of themselves in terms of sharing the impact it's had on their lives is so profound. I mean, I walk out there and I cry a lot in the show, but when I am out there, I'm so touched and moved by people that it's very common for me to get emotional out there as well. And people bring their loved ones because it is hard to articulate addiction. And so this is a wonderful opportunity for them to say, this is what I am trying to tell you. This is what I'm experiencing, and seeing it from your perspective in a way that maybe you couldn't have simply said with words. So.
Right. Right. And Steve, what about you? I'm sure you've done the tour with this play. So you must be getting all kinds of feedback from people.
Yeah, and it is similar across the country. I think folks that are in the program or involved very much in the program see so much of the Big Book, which for folks who aren't aware is sort of like the guide that Bill and Bob helped come up with, the 12 steps, you know, the way to sort of put the program in action. They say it's like seeing the Big Book come to life. But the people who aren't in the program, who've come out to see it and who didn't realize it was going to be a play about what it is, they're like, man, we love the historical aspects of it. You know, it's set back in the 20s and 30s, and you've got all the music, the costumes, the style of speech down. It's an entertaining play for people just to come out for a night at the theater or an afternoon for the matinees. But then it especially moves those people who have a personal connection to it. And like Janelle said, we get these people after the show who come up and talk to us. I've had many couples who've come and the woman is like, I've been with him for a few years and I've never understood what he's going through until now.
Wow. That's powerful.
Yeah, that kind of thing. I mean, it just, like Janelle said, it just touches you so much emotionally when people are coming up and opening themselves up to you. And there are people crying on your shoulder after the shows and just hugging you. And people will say, thank you, Dr. Bob. I am the guy who came up with the program. And it's just such an honor to sort of be the vessel, the recipient of that, you know?
Well, what's really cool, too, it's, you know, a lot of people know about AA, but not a lot of people know about how it started. What were the, you know, the processes that everybody went through to get the program, you know, initiated and all of that. And that's what I loved about it. I was like, you know what? This is a true life story about how this program that everybody knows about and is aware of came about. And it came about from the need to help somebody. You know, that's the most beautiful part of the story, I think. It's like, you know, in the end, no matter what you're struggling with, it the human condition is about exploring ways that we can help one another. And it's not like, you know, something that we advertise as much as we should, but it really is about that. Tell me how these characters kind of gave you inspiration to sink your teeth in. This is not like a fairy tale work. This is not like doing a movie or a play about some fantasy perspective. These are real people. These are real stories. These are real problems. Tell me that how aligned with your work. Janelle, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I think in terms of what you had just mentioned, having that gift of desperation and using it in a way that's healthy and can help people is something that we all, that kindness is something we all could use a little bit more of these days, that's for sure. My journey with this role of Lois, I mentioned earlier, there were words in the text that I had said verbatim in my life before. And so being able to, an actor has to find their way into the text in order to make it their own. And sometimes that is harder than others. You know, we step into a role and we explore all of the ways in which this fits within our skin and our eyes, nose, ears, mouth, all of the things that we perceive the world to be, and use that as the golden piece of what makes these characters great. But when you have something that is just right under the surface for you, in the way that this woman has been just under the surface for me for a really good amount of time, it is so cathartic and so enriching to be able to put her experience and my experience through this text and do so in a way that connects with somebody and helps them on their journey. And that makes it just so much more than a play for me. And that's the kind of authenticity that I want to try to reach in every project that I step into, because it's just right there. You know, following the show, people are always like, those were real tears. And I was like, girl, don't I know it.
How much time we got? It's a mostly heavily charged role and story. So you're going to feel it whether you're in the audience. I'm sure you both feel it, obviously, in the work. So, Steve, let's talk about how you kind of draw on that experience to kind of play the role that you do.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting for me, or kind of fun, because Dr. Bob, a guy that we sort of meet in like the 20s and 30s, he very much is reminiscent of my dad to me. And that is who I've been drawing on a little bit to play the character. And my dad, I think, I grew up in North Dakota, where we had a town of about 1,000 people, and we had like 6 active bars. And you know, in the summertime, you're out working, you're farmers, you're doing all the stuff. And in the winter, everybody just hung out in the bars. It was the thing to do. It's socialization, but then it also for some became an obsession, and you'd have people who were waiting at 10 in the morning when the bar opened to get in their first thing and would be there the entire day. And I saw a lot of that, and my family went through some problems with alcohol. And so being able to sort of come into a role like this and play one of these guys who came up with this program, not just for others, but kind of for themselves as well. They needed this program to survive.
Yeah.
It was kind of a matter of life or death for them to come up with this thing. And they were fortunate enough to meet at a time when both of them we're at a place to kind of work on it together. It's so many just little miracles or happenstances that where the situations, their paths crossed at just the right time. One had just like hit a bottom and was on his way back up, had a little sobriety. The other one was at a bottom. They realized that if they didn't want to stay there, they had to do something to lift themselves up. And so they started working on this program together and came up with this thing after months of research and working with other drunks and trying to help other people. You know, it's just a fantastic story. And when I first went and auditioned for it, I'd heard of Bill before, Friends of Bill. When you go to AA, you kind of hear a lot of talk about that. I didn't know really about Dr. Bob.
Wow.
So that was a big learning experience for me. And just, it just is such a great thing how the two of them again came together and then really bonded and became lifelong friends after that because of this amazing program they came up with.
Well, and it's also like what's cool is this program has helped so many people. And I'm sure in the process of kind of coming up with the things, they had to go through, you know, pretty dark times in their life to kind of figure out how can you pick people up out of these places. And the beautiful thing about the story, it really is, and it starts with the two of them, it is community. And community, you know, we don't realize how much of a tribal sense of living that we have, but we have that because it's like community is what comes together and kind of helps each other kind of thrive. And without that, it's like you don't have that. And it's like you don't really think about that when you're struggling with this thing by yourself that you may have started with people initially, but it ends up kind of taking on a new form. You know what I mean? So it's hard to see like how people struggle with this by themselves, like alone, usually drinking at a bar, and they could be social people, but their inner demons are trying to chase, you know, from, and a lot of it, you know, a lot of people don't talk about this, but addiction comes from some kind of trauma. There's some kind of emotional trauma that they're running from, running away from, hiding, whatever. And this social act of like, you know, just having a good time can turn into a deadly or destructive way of life that people deal with on their own. And I know so many people that deal with this on their own. So, you know, it's a powerful thing that you're doing this play. And it's a really cool thing that you're uncovering some of this. We're gonna play a little a scene that we've got of Steve with you and I think it's Bill W. in this scene. So we're gonna play a scene from this play. Let's check it out.
We've had people telling us our whole lives what's wrong with us. That just gets our backs up, makes us dig in our heels. They can't fix us with that.
No, they can't, Smitty, but telling our own stories to each other, that's real. I mean, that has a ring of truth to it. Then maybe when we're telling it, something true crosses the gap from one drunk to another. It's like sound waves or light rays. And then maybe when we're telling it, when no one's looking, it just reaches under the ribs and just touches the other fella's heart.
All right, you're getting a little complicated with it, Abercrombie. You're throwing in all this fireworks and magic.
No, I can see the whole shape of this thing emerging.
Well, this new treatment of yours works. We've got no choice but to try it on others.
Together? I'll go easy on the fireworks. Hey, maybe that flash of mine was nothing more than to bring me along to this meeting here with you. If there's a miracle, partner, this is it.
Yeah, well, I don't know about all that, but looks like it's not religion after all, just other drunks. Maybe something else working through us.
We'll save hundreds, thousands. We'll save millions of people.
Let's just get one more.
I love that. I love that. So yeah. Tell me a little bit, give us a little bit of a backstory of that scene, Steve.
Well, that is the scene that's sort of at the end of Act One, going into the intermission, where Bill and Bob have finally met for the first time. They're brought together by Henrietta Seiberling, who's an acquaintance of Bob's family, Bob's wife mainly. Bill reaches out to her because he's in town, needs some help because he's about to go under, about to succumb again to drinking. He's been sober for 5 months. Henrietta recommends he talks to this other person because he knows that he needs another drinking man to speak to, someone who can actually relate to his story. So those two get together. Bob doesn't want any part of it, says he can only spare like 15 minutes. They end up spending like 6 hours together.
Wow.
And just really connecting and starting to tell their stories. And as they do this, they realize there are these parallels, there are these similarities that everybody struggling with a problem goes through, you know, and there are these different things that they've tried, these different paths that they've worked on, and this little thing might have helped, and this thing kind of helped me, and they start putting those things together. And, you know, the creation of AA basically happens in that room that night, June 10th, which is what they're Founders Day. Is what that is. And they celebrate that in Akron, Ohio, which is Bob's home.
That's cool.
Actually at Bob's house. They have a museum set up these days. One lady after a show in Chicago gave me a coin from Bob's house.
Wow.
That's got a tea or a coffee pot on it. And like a saying, you know, that is just very much associated with Bob. And so it's an incredible experience that they got together at that point. And a lot of folks, the lights go down for intermission, they start to clap, and I think they think that's the end of the play. It's like, great, the guys got together. And then it's like, no, there's an intermission. We got more.
Okay, there's more.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's what a good play does. It's like, end of every act, or, you know, even if it's two acts or three acts, it just leaves you like that could be the end of the whole story. But then there's another, you know, new beginning. It's like, that's just good writing. I feel like good plays, good art will tell a story, and it can do it the best when it's like sanctioned in sections where you think it's the end, but then there's, you know, it just keeps you riveted. Let's talk about you both as actors. Let's go back to the moment of zen that made you want to become actors. Janelle, what was the moment of zen for you that made you want to pursue this?
So I remember as a kid never really getting involved in theater because I was an athlete and the theater kids wouldn't let me play with them. But I always had this like urge to want to, you know, I always wanted to dip my toe into that pool, but I was way too much of a jock, and that took up my spring, winter, summer, fall, all the time. So as I got older, I went to this singing competition in Florida, and I was able to compete in two events. And so I decided to do acting and singing. And I was given this commercial copy, and I went up and I auditioned, and I had gotten a call to do some work on The Sopranos. I'm from New Jersey originally. And so awesome. Sopranos was a rite of passage, I guess. And so I did small little background work on The Sopranos, but it was so pivotal for me because I'm sitting there and I'm holding this tray of food, and James Gandolfini is standing right in front of me, and I was his cue. And so like when I passed, that was his moment to do whatever it was that he did so incredibly. And I just remember after just being so in awe of what I just watched from him. And he was like all worked up, and he looked over at me, and I just went. And he went. And I was like, I want to do that. I want somebody to look at me and be like, I just admire the work that she does. And I wanted to create something so much more than what I was creating with that tray of food. But in that moment, I knew like no matter what happened or what job I had, that this was always going to be a path that I was going to follow on. And I'm so grateful that my life has kind of put into motion the fact that I can do this, you know, not just as a hobby, but as my career as well. It's wonderful.
That's very cool. Very cool. Steve, what about you?
So James Gandolfini comes to me.
Hey, copyright infringement.
No, I grew up in a small town and was very bored as a kid, like a lot of kids in small towns are, and grew up in the movie theater. We were lucky enough to have a theater in amongst all the bars everybody frequented. And my family was great about letting me go and see whatever movies I wanted. At the time, if a movie was R-rated, you could go to it if a parent would go with you or write you a note.
Right.
And my mom got so tired of writing notes, she eventually just wrote one that was like, Steven can see any movie he wants to see.
That's awesome.
It was great. Unfortunately, there was never anything that good to see. But there was some great stuff. I saw some amazing movies and grew up just loving storytelling and what they did in the movies. And
what were some of those early movies that you saw? What were the movies that kind of struck you?
I mean, I remember everything from like the Three Stooges, like serials at the beginning of the movies, because they would show that at our theater matinee on Saturday. There'd be a couple of cartoons, awesome. There'd be a Three Stooges, and then you'd get into whatever the movie was. And at the time, it was like, you know, Willy Wonka. I saw that in the theater.
Wow.
Some great old films, you know, as a kid that you just enjoy growing up. And then they also ran like some of the old black and whites, because the older folks in town still like to see like Bob Hope and Bing Crosby on the road to whatever.
Right.
And as a matter of fact, my wife and I have been married now for like 8 years. My wife and I when we got engaged, we took a trip to Bali.
Wow.
And we did that because of the Road to Bali movie with right. Bing and Bob, because she was like, where would you like to go? I go, honestly, I'd kind of like to go to Bali just because it always seems so amazing. That whole movie was shot on a back lot somewhere here in Los Angeles. Nobody stepped foot in.
That's showbiz, baby. That's showbiz.
It made me want to go to Bali all those years later, and it was worth it. It was a great trip. So I got into acting. I was in stand-up comedy for a while. I was acting in high school, you know, different productions, different things like that. Janelle probably with her friends would have been beating me up because I was one of the theater nerds.
You hear that, Janelle?
She's no, like, you didn't let me play with you.
Yes.
That's because we were busy digging wedgies out of our butts. That's what took up a lot of time. But a little acting here and there. I got into radio out of high school because I wanted to get into stand-up comedy, which I did for a number of years. And did stand-up for a while. Enjoyed that. I actually worked in Patch Adams in the background of that out in North Carolina because I was living out that way when they were filming at UNC, University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, looking for people with long hair at the time. I had it, got in there, and just enjoyed. I was in the classroom scenes. You can see my elbow. You can see my back. You never really see me. But I got to be in the room while Robin Williams was doing his thing. And he would come in and just rev up and start talking to himself and pacing at the beginning of the class. And it would be like, and we're going. And he would just go into a scene. And a great guy. Talked to him. He actually went out and performed at the Comedy Club in Raleigh, North Carolina, which was my home club. Blew the place away. It was on the news. You know, everybody was just freaked out about the whole thing. But enjoyed that experience. And then when I came out to LA and had a life change that got me out of comedy, I decided to start making some short films and had some success with it. And then just thought, why not? I'm just going to keep pursuing and see what goes on.
That's awesome. You know, a lot of people don't know that I had a background in opera. So like opera is what I studied. It's what I performed in as a kid. It's what I studied in college. And it's like, that is like the ultimate in theater, music, like composition. It's really like one of the most ultimate art forms. And it led me into musical theater, led me into plays. You must love the live energy of an audience, because with acting, you don't always get that if you're on a commercial, if you're, you know, it's getting seen, but there's something about performing in a room full of people where there's energy, there's a response, the jokes hit, the emotions hit if it's sad. Tell me how that translates to you as artists and what that experience is like for you doing a play. Because you both talked about doing visuals like movies and TV shows. But tell me, now that you're doing this play, how does that shift gears for you? How does that kind of raise the stakes? Janelle, we'll start with you.
So I, like Steve, had also had some experience in stand-up. And I did stand-up because I wanted to do something scary. And secondly, that instant gratification you get from a joke well landed is something that once you get a taste of that, that's an addiction in and of itself. And right. So my experience on the stage was primarily stand-up, sketch comedy, improv. And so it was really in the comedy space. I'm on the newer side to theater since people didn't let me play with them. But yes. Nowadays, my husband and I, we run Theater 68, which is a bi-coastal theater company that produces the Bill W. and Dr. Bob show. And so my life is theater these days. And awesome. this is one of the first full-scale productions that I have been a part of as an actor. And so it's been just a whirlwind to get up on that stage. And you're right, there is so much about the show that is so funny. That relatability, those people in the audience seeing themselves and relating. Right. It's just hilarious, like the insanity that had to ensue for these two men to get together. And then what happened after they met and said, okay, let's give this thing a try. And finding those moments where we can really lean into that comedy and the levity is so important. And having that feedback from the audience is like gold. And yes. Then similarly, in the emotional parts of it too, you know, when I'm doing, we call it the packing scene. There's a really emotional scene where Lois is packing up her stuff to go home, to go back to New York and leave Bill there because he's not paying any attention to her. And there is just I just got the chills. There is an energy to that scene that is palpable from the people in the audience who understand what it feels like to be in that position with their alcoholic. And so feeling that energy from the crowd is just something that you can't replicate with a camera. And so that makes it a lot of fun. It's very satisfying as, you know, as a performer. Yeah. and very gratifying as a human. And so I think that is a perfect blend of like being able to bring this thing to life in a really, really profound way.
Love that. Great answer. Steve, what about you?
So James Gandolfini. No.
After Robin Williams.
Very similar sort of experience. The feedback from the audience really does keep us going sometimes. And it happens a lot naturally when you're doing some comedy because people, you know, love that release of tension, especially when the play gets to some of the more serious moments. But you've also got these parts of the play where Bill has sworn off booze for a little while. He's dry at this point, telling a guy in a bar about it as he's waiting for like a ride to pick him up, take him to the golf course. And he ends up just taking a drink that's sitting on the table in front of him. And you hear the crowd. People are, no. There are gasps. Right. Because they're into the story. And then they want to stop him. They want to try and like be a part of this and keep him from making this mistake. And I mean, it's amazing when you get that, like they're so invested in what you've got going on. That kind of feedback is great. And then there are the things too that happen. At the end of one scene, Bob and his wife, Anne, have been sort of like, Bill is staying with them. Lois is staying with them. They've come out from New York City. They're in Akron. A couple of other people that they're working with to try and help them get their sobriety are also staying there along with their kids. All of this happens. And at the end of one very big emotional scene where Al-Anon is kind of created, Lois says to this woman, "You stay here tonight, dear, with us." And a woman in the crowd at one performance went, "How big is their house?" And we're all frozen on stage in this tableau trying to look very serious. But inside, you just want to laugh and just like bust out. But I've said to folks in the past, this play is kind of like a Marvel movie for drunks in the sense that they get the Easter eggs. They know the inside stuff even before they know the story so well. They're anticipating characters, they're anticipating appearances and lines and phrases that turn into one day at a time or, you know, making amends, whatever it might be that relates in the actual program to them. They get all that stuff and they're so invested in it that it is, yeah, it's a great experience to be on stage and getting that kind of feedback, that kind of love from the audience. It's amazing.
Well, it's funny because I've been, you know, Steve, you know this, I've been in a band for 20 years and I kind of left the opera world because, you know, like polite applause is great, but there's nothing like playing a festival in front of a giant crowd and hearing that applause or even a small intimate room, you know. And it's funny because now I'm directing and producing a music series called Sight and Sound where I'm taking the band out of the element of the stage and we're putting them in the studio and bringing in a special guest where there are no audience members. And it just makes you realize like how special live art is. Like the people that attend, the people that come, they're part of the experience. It's a dialogue. And it's like, you're throwing out there and it's coming back. That is the art right there. You know, it's like, it's not the same when you're in a cubicle of space or, you know, a controlled environment that you're trying to just make it, you know, sing so that a lot of people can have it. But there's something about a live room, an audience, a play. I still go to plays all the time because there's still some of my favorite, you know, ways to see art. I'm sure you guys have seen huge actors. We saw Tom Hanks in Henry V. I mean, where else? This is what I love about LA. Where else can you see Tom Hanks in and a Shakespeare play, you know what I mean? Or it's just, there's something about like seeing great actors, especially live stage actors. Mm-hmm. There is a muscle that live stage actors have that is so much harder than when they're doing it, you know, behind the camera. They have multiple takes they can use. There's something about being in the moment. Like, can you do it at the drop of a hat? How do you prepare for a role like this? And how does it change as you keep doing it over time? Because as you know, plays, the art doesn't change. It's just how you process and how you're able to kind of convey the message and, you know, hit your lines and hit your marks and do all those things. How does that change or how has that changed over time? And what kind of the things do you do to prepare for these roles? Janelle, we'll start with you.
Well, I love what you said about going to theater, and please keep going.
Yes.
All of your listeners, please keep coming. Theater has changed during the pandemic. It has shifted. We are bringing this show and the other show under our roster. The director, who also plays Bill W. in this, wrote and stars in a one-man show about Lenny Bruce. We're taking both on the road. And we have it's amazing. We're having an incredible experience. But theater has changed, and we've seen that shift. And so we need the younger generations to find their way back to the theater. It's far too easy for people to take their remotes and go like this.
Yes.
You will not.
People are lazy.
What's that?
I said people are lazy. It's lazy. Now they have everything in their phone, so they just want it.
Can curate their experience. And so what we try to do on the road is create an experience. So if people are going to get their butts off their couch into a car, into the theater, they're going to have a night of it. And so that's us doing our part. But please, please, please get your butts back to the theater. There's some beautiful work to be had there. And you can see some incredible things. Now, how do I keep things fresh for myself and continue to search? I listen. Because the one thing I have learned from improv and from sketch comedy is that things can change on a dime, or you don't know what's on the other side of that line. And so present, not trying to recreate what may have crushed it last night, not trying to dig myself out of what may have fallen flat, just being really present and really authentic to where I'm at that particular moment and what works for Janelle, the artist, so that I can be that vessel for the work and react accordingly. Because if I'm not taking what I'm getting from my scene partner, then we're not in the same play and it's not going to work. Right. And so it's going to change and evolve just by design. But ultimately, all we have is the very much like sobriety. All we have is this moment we're in right now. You know, we can't get stuck in what happened yesterday, and we can't expect that tomorrow is going to be the same. We have to work with what we have in this particular moment. And that's really where the magic is, because if you can live in that space, then all of a sudden you're at curtain call and you're like, what the heck just happened? That was amazing. And then you're just flying, you know?
I think also like that moment, as soon as the lights go down, there's nothing that replaces that feeling of like, everybody's behind set, just like, about to go on. That energy is the best. And I even love just like when you're in like a group like that or a cast and you're just able to watch people do their thing. There's like there's a vantage point that you get that even the audience doesn't get that. And that's what makes it exciting. Steve, what about you?
Actors are weird. There's some weird stuff that goes on backstage. It's fun. You got people screaming. You got like Steve, that's Steve's.
The warm-ups, definitely. I'm the caca.
Steve, what about you? Like, especially you've been traveling with this role for a while. How do you make it new for yourself? What makes that process fun for you?
I think a lot of what Janelle says, I definitely agree with. Like the listening is really something that kind of keeps it fresh and not falling into too much of just like, all right, this is where I say this line, this is where that line goes, this line here. Listen to what your scene partner on stage is saying and react to what they're saying as if it's the first time you've heard it. And then also listening to the response from that audience, because that is what you can draw from when you're on stage with a band. You know what's working. You know what's hitting. You know, as a stand-up comic, when you're in the groove and when things are going. And you know that, too, when you're in a play. You can feel that kind of energy. And there are moments when, like, you can hear a pin drop, like literally an entire, you know, theater, everybody's holding their breath to see what happens next. And you know what's going to happen because you've got the next line, but you kind of don't because it's you're just held there. You're in that moment. And it's amazing. It's so great to share communal experiences, live theater, comedy shows, bands, dance parties, whatever it is. Get out there and be a part of your society, because that's how we grow. That's how we build. That's how everybody, you know, we supply different pieces of ourselves to others, and we build a bigger and better thing together.
Yes.
I love that. You can do that just by going to a show. You can do that by just being nice to others while you're out and about. Pick up a piece of trash, do a little something, help, you know, hold the door for somebody, whatever. That's all just kind of out there and something that people should do. But for preparing for a role, you know, you try and keep it as fresh as you can. You try to listen to the other actors. You try to listen to your director. Occasionally, Ronnie will end up seeing something and just have a thought. And you'll see Ronnie, like he walks off the stage, grabs his cell phone, dressed in this 1930s gear, starts typing in something frantically, puts it down, throws a hat on, gets back out. And then he'll come back to you later and go, you know, I think in that scene, you should try it where you've got less anger and go for like a little more of disappointment. And you're like, oh, never thought of it that way. Give it a try. And it turns the scene completely around.
That's cool.
And you find something new and different that way.
Well, I love that he would make a note like that, because I feel like one of the most powerful things we can do as artists is restraint. Mm-hmm. And it's like, there's so much unbridled power in restraint that we forget. It's like, most people think art should be out like this, but it's like the performances that move us the most, the guitar solos that move us the most, whatever it is, it's the ones that show restraint that become the most powerful, or the most like, wow, that was so, you know, emotionally driven without it being overstated. So
right.
It's hard to find that power in either text, or maybe it's music, maybe it's, some stand-up comedy line. It's like, it is that powerful thing of like ebb and flow. Are there moments when you have moments, I mean, as a cast, that you feel like there's momentum and then there's this ebb moment where it's like you just have time to kind of like let the room, let the words, the text, let it like kind of resonate within the cast and the audience? Tell me what those moments are like for you. Janelle, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I think, you know, one thing that Ronnie really has us focus on is pace, and making sure that we are keeping that pace and keeping the show moving. Because one thing he always says is, if every moment's a moment, there are no moments. And so we keep that pace breakneck on purpose, so that when those ebbs happen, they're not ebbs in a negative sense. They are an opportunity. They're an opportunity for us to really shine that moment up and make it something that is really special. You know, if we have everybody at their edge, the edge of their seat, you know, watching this show come at them at 150 miles an hour, say it's like drinking from a fire hose. You're taking all of this in at 150 miles an hour. And then there's the moment where it just like stops to slow down for a moment. We earned that. You know, it's that opportunity to be able to sit with yourself, which I know is not easy for everybody to do. And I think good theater, while it makes you laugh and makes you cry, it also can make you a little uncomfortable. And it forces you to take a look at that and see what that is, and how you can use that as a superpower, not something to inhibit you. And so, you know, this particular combination of actors has been really something very special. We have a number of people involved with the production. We have, I think it's four casts between LA and Chicago. Steve's in literally all of them. And
that's so awesome.
We called, quick sidebar, we called Steve at like 8 o'clock at night on a Thursday and said, hey, what are you doing at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning? Do you want to come to Chicago? Because we had a little snafu with our Dr. Bob in Chicago, and Steve just was like, okay.
Got I'm there. I'm ready.
And came and helped us open the show in Chicago. And so I think that also is something to jump back that keeps it fresh. He works with a different combination of actors every single time he gets up there.
You're the constant. You're the constant Dr. Bob.
You're the glue that holds the whole thing together, Steve.
Yeah, I hate to think that I'm the glue because we're coming apart. We're coming apart at the seams. That's what's happening there.
How do you keep it moving? You know, between the two of you, both of you, Steve and Janelle, like, how do you keep it paced correctly night after night?
It is what we have been directed to do. You know, Ronnie does emphasize the pace, like Janelle says, so that we can earn those slower moments. But the audience feedback really does help guide that to a degree. You can feel when things are working and when they're not. And sometimes night after night, if you've got like a line that you think should be working and it doesn't, you can start to experiment with it. You can play with it a little bit. Right. It's like, you know, do I emphasize it? Do I throw it away? Do I give it like a special moment where it stands out by itself? Or is it a line that's never going to get anything beyond what it gets? And I should just be focused on the stuff that's working. You know, as an actor, I think you want to try and work on that stuff no matter what, because it's like a little frustration to you or a little idea that I'm going to get this thing. I'm going to make this thing work. Darn. There are certain lines in the play that I think are hysterical. There's one that Janelle reads as Lois. As she's reading a letter from Bill telling her what's going on over at Bob's place. And he goes, you know, Eddie got mad. And what was it? He gets
angry at a tuna fish sandwich.
He got angry at a tuna fish sandwich, which I think is hysterical. The fact that you would get mad at a tuna fish sandwich. but on the heels of that, he tried to stab someone because of his upset. But it's like there's a laugh there. I know there is because it's a funny line to me. And Janelle's been able to find it and get that laugh from like a good 15, 20% of the crowd on that one line that was never hitting anything.
Right.
So to see that develop, like as you're backstage and watching it and going like, she took a beat there and she found that thing and that gets more of a laugh. She's going to do that again. And, you know, you do that. It's
what it also humanizes the subject matter a little bit when you have where like, it's like, okay, it's, you're not going to get lectured for 2 hours when you see this play about, you know, like, it's like, it humanizes all the characters when you can laugh. You get like attached to these people and then you see their struggle and then you're like, you're in it with them. So that humor is kind of like disarming the audience in a lot of ways to like, hey, we're all in this and we all go through things and this is humanizing the story a little bit, right?
I try to do that quite a bit with Lois too, specifically because it is a character that's not the most forgiving on the page. You know, she's there to show the destruction that alcoholism does to the families.
Right.
And that can be, in the wrong hands, a very heavy task to bring to the stage. And so I try to lean into the levity where I can and find those moments where people can laugh with her. And that's something that maybe you can hear her story that much more clearly because it lets your guard down. You know, with something like this, people can be like, well, a little too close to it. You know what I mean? And so adding that comedy just helps kind of break those barriers down. And, you know, maybe you're able to touch some more people with laughter as the medicine.
And Steve, you know, coming from you're seeing Robin Williams do his thing. You must kind of approach some of this with, okay, I have to make every performance count like Robin did. Is there a moment like that that you have on stage with Dr. Bob where you try to channel what Robin kind of showed you with, you know, his experience?
Nothing as manic and as impressive as Robin, because that guy could do some amazing things. The level he was operating on was like a whole different thing. But there are places, there are times when I can really feel like I'm in the groove with the character and making a difference. And when you come out afterwards and the crowd's around you and you're hanging out and talking like we did when you came and saw the play, and you find out how people were moved. And many times I've had people go, you're my Dr. Bob. Mm-hmm. Like when I read the big book from now on, when I tell the stories, when I, you know, talk, you're Dr. Bob in my head. That, I mean, it's overwhelming. It's beautiful. It's you kind of want that as an actor to sort of live on in someone's head as a character.
Yeah.
And to get people telling you that they're carrying you with them from there on out is very humbling.
I love that. Where can people find this play? Where can they see it? Let's list all the cities, but I know we're doing it in LA. Janelle, I know you're ready to just give me the whole list.
The producer mustache on. The actor hat, but on the producer mustache.
Be the billboard.
So we are currently in North Hollywood at the Theater 68 Arts Complex. We are going to be running there for the foreseeable future. We just extended through May 4th, which is also awesome. My birthday.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you. We are also scheduled to play Skokie, Illinois. We open on May 30th. And so we are there currently scheduled for 2 weeks with the hope of extending there as well. So tickets can be found at Bill W and Dr. Bob onstage.com. Also follow us on social, Bill W and Dr. Bob on Stage, for both Instagram and Facebook. And that's where you'll find all of the players as well. Steve, myself, Ronnie, our Bill W and director, and the whole rest of the cast. We have some pretty incredible people that we are very fortunate enough to have involved. So follow all of the awesome things they have going on as well.
Love it. And Steve, where can people find you if they want to find you online and find more information about this?
I do have, of course, social media all over the place. SteveGelder.com is my website. No longer on Twitter. More of a blue sky guy, but Steve Gelder over there. Insta, Facebook, you can pretty much find me just under my name. The only other person you'll get with that name is a business guy from England who is very upset that I got all of our social media first. He runs a very important construction company.
That's awesome.
Not, did you let him know that you have met Robin Williams, and so yeah, that in and of itself means you should get it?
He must know by now.
He owns a race car, actually. Oh, so
that's all right.
You know, I think he's got his own thing going on. He's doing all right. But yeah, I am out there, and of course, the easiest way to meet me is to come out and see the play.
That's right. And you know, I want to tell you, you guys are doing something really powerful. Something really like reaffirming for people, really inspiring, and You're doing the work. You know, you're doing the most amazing thing that you can, which is helping people see some light in a dark tunnel, you know? So continue to do your work. Thank you. Continue to take this story around the country. People need it. And thanks for being guests on Wake Up Hollywood. Would love to see you keep doing this and more, and bring anything that you guys want to showcase. You have an open door to come back. So yes,
thank you, Robert.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Janelle, Marmo, and Steve Gelder in Bill W and Dr. Bob. Go see him in North Hollywood. Go see him in Illinois. Go see him wherever you can, because it's a great show. I've seen it personally. It's powerful. It's amazing. It will resonate with you. It will make you think about people that are struggling with this. Do yourself a favor and go see this play. Peace and love, everybody. We'll see you guys next week. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Peace, love, and hey, Greece.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Korula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.